Good afternoon. My name is Edgar, and I'm an addict. The test didn't get it right, huh? Okay, my name is Edgar, and I'm an addict. And the first thing I want to say is one of the great ironies of NA is that it took a fearful, full of self-doubt addict like me and gave him the faith to come up here and think by telling his story, I would somehow be able to carry the message to the addict that still suffer, and in that process help myself. You know, I want to welcome everybody. I want to be thankful and express my gratitude to the CMP area of Narcotics Anonymous for having that kind of trust and faith in me and giving me the opportunity to come in here and share my experience, strength, and hope. I also want to say welcome to the newcomer. Anybody that just came down, maybe just came in the NA, just started becoming a part of this fellowship, welcome. We need you. We want you here. You know, we love you. I love you, and I need you. You know, and that's how y'all made me feel when I first came. You know, like I was welcome. Like y'all needed me just as much as I needed y'all. And, you know, like y'all could identify with a person like me who couldn't stop using, who didn't have no hope, who was full of self-doubt, you know, who had tried so many things. I tried methadone. I tried substitution. I tried don't use today but use tomorrow. I tried different routes of administration. Don't do it this way. Do it that way. Don't strike red. You know, smoke. I tried to do it any kind of way. Don't use drugs. Drink alcohol. And none of it worked for me, you know. And I want to say, like, it don't matter how many times you fall down. Just get up one more time than you fall down, you know. So if you fall down 7 times, get up 8, you know. Man, I am so grateful, and I have enjoyed myself down at this convention so much. I enjoyed Narcotics Anonymous a whole lot, you know. I came down Thursday. I saw a lot of y'all in registration yesterday. And those of y'all that saw me, we had a ball, you know, when y'all came through the line with the cash. You know, we had fun. You know, it's a pleasure to be of service in all capacities in this program. Now, I'm gonna tell y'all a little bit about before I got here. Because before I got here, I started using at a very young age. I'm 50. This is the year I'll be 56 in a few months. I started using somewhere around 14 or 15 years old. And I started using in an era that they call, like, the era of the flower children. It was like a peace movement, and it was a lot of unrest in our country, you know, because of the war and all that, right? And everybody, it just seemed like one day I came outside and everybody was on dope. You know, I mean, everybody. And I can still remember the little vixen hailers and all the little stuff that went along with that, and it looked so cool, you know. And because I was so full of self-doubt, because I felt so inferior, and I'll get into the reasons for that a little bit later, but because I needed to identify with something so bad because I didn't have no faith, no belief, no good feelings about myself, I did what y'all did, you know. I ain't have no identity, so I took on y'all's identity. And I started using, and because of all those things, those feelings I had about myself, the dope was the only thing that kind of made me feel a kind of euphoria that quieted some of that stuff down, you know. I could kind of, like, be all right with myself once I got on dope. And I didn't realize, I had no idea, I didn't ask anybody about this drug for real. I ain't go, like now when a doctor prescribed me a prescription, I can go online, right? Find out what it is, what the side effects are, and all that kind of stuff. But I ain't do none of that with this dope, with this thing, right? Yeah, somebody told me, I remember just like it was yesterday, we were sitting up by this playground they call St. Anthony's. And he was telling me, man, you know, I shot something last night. Man, that's no thing. That ain't nothing. Try this. You know, and I did it. What 14-year-old kid does that? But I did it, you know, and I ain't look back. And that started like a cycle, man. And because of, I guess I was at the development stage of my life, a very important stage of a person's life is when they're a teenager, you know. And because I hadn't developed mentally, spiritually, all the things we talked about, That took the place of all that. And the next thing I knew, I had quit school. I had quit my girlfriend. I had started stealing from my, you know, from my mother's, just doing everything that you can imagine. I had started doing it. I mean, it seemed like it went so fast. By the time I was like 17 or 18, I had my first 5010B. And that's a federal Youth Corrections Act, you know. And my parents, my mother was baffled because I had a good family. You know, I couldn't use the excuse that I ain't had no home training or I was hungry. I couldn't use none of them excuses. She provided a very good atmosphere for development for me. But because of all these things we talking about, fear, self-doubt, inferior feeling about myself, I didn't grasp none of that. And so, just like our literature say, my disease progressed. The first time that I got on methadone, I think I was around 17, and she took me because she ain't know what to do. My mother ain't know what to do. She was a lady from down Virginia, down south, who didn't have nothing but a seventh grade education. She ain't know nothing about no dope. So I guess she found out from somebody, well, take them here. So they put me on methadone. I remember she took me because she had the sign for me. And I abused that and continued to use. I mean, everything that somebody could try, she tried. I went down to youth center. And, you know, I did that thing. I came out. I went back. And the cycle of addiction just continued and continued. And around 1980, a couple of judges and my parole officer got together, and they say, you know, because, man, I was incorrigible. You know, I was incorrigible. And so they got together and say, let's, instead of sentencing him to jail this time, let's let him go to a therapeutic community. And so they sent me to a therapeutic community. That was a kind of new thing on this side of the coast. And I stayed in there for 2 years. And I learned a lot about myself, but I didn't surrender. You know, I didn't surrender. And part of the criteria in that therapeutic community was that I attend NA meetings at the point where I was ready for reentry into society. So I went to some NA meetings. That was around 1981 because I graduated that program in 1982. And I went to the NA meetings. I listened to y'all, but I really didn't listen. You know, I just came because I had to meet the criteria so that I could get out and graduate from that program. And I did that. I got some things out of there. I think I got an idea of what it was like not to use, but I didn't surrender. And so my life improved a little bit for a couple of years. And I literally say sometimes the disease or the descent into the progression is rapid. Sometimes it's slow. But it's always what? Downhill. So I went. I got out. I got a good job. You know, I recovered socially. But I didn't surrender. And within a few years, I got married. Started a family, you know, and all that good stuff. But, man, I was still me. And I started chipping. First, I started trying to hustle. And I don't want to use something I heard use a lot, what monkey can sell bananas, but, man, that was the truth. I couldn't sell no drugs, you know what I'm saying? Before I knew it, man, I was back to right where I started from. And I got locked up for selling somebody one bag of dope. I got 9 years. But if that was before they changed the law, so I could make parole. I made parole about 2.5 years later, and about a year and a half after that, a judge gave me 20 years. He suspended 10 and gave me 2 years probation. They call it a split sentence. I had 10 years to do. I had 10 years suspended. If I complete the 2 years probation, the last 10 goes away. I was 30-some years old. I was in my mid-30s, and I was beat. My mother had cancer. And before I got the time, I had to kind of charge, and I had the kind of background. And I ain't no gangster. I ain't tough. But because of the desperation that this disease kind of puts on me, I'd be such in the grip that I think I'll walk on hot coals to get a shot of dope. I think I'll walk over cut glass if you catch me on the right day to get a shot of dope. You know, it ain't nothing tough about me. I'm just weak. You know, and I'm desperate. And I want to make that clear. So when I say that I had the kind of background and the kind of charge that made me think I was going to not get out anymore, I'm not saying that because I was thought I was thorough. It's just because that's the kind of desperate stuff I do. And some of y'all probably can relate to that. Do things you don't think you'll do. People be telling me, you got heart. Man, I ain't got no damn heart. I was ill. You dig what I'm saying? Yeah, I was ill. And I'd do anything when I'm ill, you know. So, and I wanted to tell y'all this in the beginning. Sometimes I lose my thoughts. So if I hesitate sometimes, it's because I'm trying to gather myself.
It's okay.
So, you know, I had that kind of situation. And when the judge gave me the 20 years and suspended 10, I did like this. Damn. Grateful, you know. And when I walked out that courtroom that day, something changed. I don't know what it was. I didn't think. I ain't had no good lawyer. I had a state lawyer. My mother couldn't help me. She was dying. I couldn't attribute this good fortune that just took place because I was looking for 30 and beyond. Y'all hear me? I was looking for 30 and plus. If he gave me 30, I won't be that bad. Maybe I'll get out again. When he gave me like what was equivalent to 10 years as jail, I said, man, I can do this. It was very manageable at that point. But the one thing that was clear, if I don't do something different, if I do get back out, this ain't happening no more. My life is over. And so while I was doing that time, my mother passed, my father passed, my stepson passed, my wife divorced me. I mean, you know, it was rough. But the one thing I clung to and the one thing I started thinking about was, man, what would happen if you stop using? I kept thinking, somehow, all them things that I went through, I never thought about stopping. I always thought, how can I use and this kind of stuff don't happen to me? And, you know, I never would think about stopping. But while I was doing that time, remember now, I had been to Narcotics Anonymous before, but only, you know, like, I guess in a very intermittent way. But in this particular institution, H&I was coming. You know, and I started hearing a message and I started thinking about not using. The thought used to come to me fleetingly. Man, what would happen if you ain't used? What kind of life would you have? What else do you know to do? You know what I'm saying? And I couldn't figure it all out, but I say, damn, it's worth a try. You know, I might should try this. And so I kept going to the H&I meetings. I got a book. I got a basic text. And I started reading the literature some. And I read who was an addict. And one of the things that they're saying who was an addict is that our misconceptions about drugs, we conjure up visions of street crime, violence, dirty needles, and jails. And I ain't had to conjure up no visions of that. That was my reality. You know what I'm saying? That was my reality, so I said. And so reading the literature helped me really see myself clearly, you know. I could see, damn, this thing was written about you for real. So I started reading the literature, and I started growing, y'all. I started, like, having a desire to stop using. You know, it started as a little ember, right? But then, you know, it started growing. I start thinking about it more, you know, what I'm going to do if I don't use. And I went through that process, and finally one day, they called me and said, man, you going out in the morning. And, you know, my gut, just like when I was sitting here, my gut started flipping. You dig? I got to go out there now, you know. Is this thing going to work? Am I going to be able to not to use? Because I had never not used, man, never. I don't care where I was at. The only time I didn't use was while I was doing that last time I had started, when I was in that therapeutic community. Them was the only periods in my life when I hadn't used, and I was being controlled in them situations. So now I say, what's going to happen when Edgar got to take responsibility for himself and his own recovery? I ain't have a lot of faith in myself in that regard. I had a lot of doubt. But something I saw in y'all, the people that brought the H&I message, and I ain't know them because I was up in Washington County. I ain't know them. They weren't from D.C. So I ain't seen nobody I knew bringing a message. But something about us, you know, we relate to each other. We give each other hope. You know, so I came out, and I remember walking out that day, man, and I didn't use. And I didn't get to a meeting that day. I called my brother-in-law. He came and got me. I went home. And the next day, the first order of business was go to a meeting. So I got to a meeting, and I liked it. I was back in D.C. now. I saw some people I knew. You know, they wasn't using. And so the fan of that little ember now, that fire was being, you know, fanned a little bit. It was growing. I saw some girls. You know, they look good. You know, they're fast. And, man, this thing might be all right, you know. So I kept coming. You know, I kept coming. And but now, that's enough about that. Because I got here and I stayed. But, man, when I was growing up, I was always a very doubtful guy. I was very insecure. And some of the sources of that was I was short. My name was Edgar. Okay, my name was Edgar, right? And I can remember being in party. You know, back in the day, we'd be in a party, and a girl, somebody would introduce me to somebody, and they'd say, man, this is, or sir, this is Edgar. Edgar, this is sir. And sir would say, what, huh? What's his name? And he'd say, it's Edgar. She'd say, Edgar, what? And so that used to make me be very apprehensive about meeting people, you know, because it seemed like it was so uncomfortable. And then I was short. And I was the kind of guy, I wasn't very assertive. You know, I wasn't an aggressive guy. I was more, and I still am. I'm not going to speak in the past tense about that. I still am. I'm a kind of reserved person, you know. I got to get to know you. You know, I'm not going to be the life of the party, if you know what I mean. You're going to have to warm up to me. You know, you're not going to look over across the room and say, damn, he's fine. You know? you get my drift? So I was kind of like, you know, it took some doing for me. And so I was always full of self-doubt. My sister is like 3 years older than me. And I wrote this in my fourth step, and I brought it with me, but I'm not going to read. I think I can talk it. I think I can get through it talking. My sister is 3 years, my sister next to me is 3 years older than me. And she kind of raised me. You know how older sisters are older brothers. And she was like, she used to go to the skating rink, go on whoop. You know, she was very assertive and aggressive, and people in the neighborhood knew her. And when they see me, oh, that's Arnita's little brother, you know. You know, that's, you know, I wasn't, you know, I was just like, to me, pushed to the back. And I kind of developed. And then in the era when I grew up, adults, they didn't really, you know, you ain't have a lot to say. Adults was like, they didn't ask your opinion about things. They didn't want to know really what you wanted. They told you, you're going to eat this. You going to this school, it wasn't multiple choice with them. It was their way or the highway. That's the way I was brought up. And I think because of that, I never developed that thing of what I want, you know, trying to demand what I want. It was always, I would rather make you happy, and I thought about my happiness kind of later, you know what I mean? I don't know no good way of putting it. That's just how it was. You know, they weren't mean or they didn't abuse. Like this child abuse thing today, I don't know, because my mother didn't abuse me, but she beat my ass. You know what I'm saying? She beat my ass. So, and I thank her for it. You know, because I think it made, once I got to recovery, the lessons that my mother tried to give me, that I paid absolute, but I must have been paying, through the fog, I must have heard something, because now I know how to say yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. If I see somebody struggling with something and I can help them, I know how to reach out and help them. I have some empathy in my heart today and compassion. And I think I got those things to her. I know how to manage my financial life because she taught me that. Even though I ain't paying no attention to her when she was doing it, it seemed like. But this program, they say, is recovery. And if you never had something, you can't get it back. Only thing you can recover is something that you had. And so she gave me some things. And so once I turned my life over to y'all a little bit and let y'all guide me, I was able to go back and get some of that. You see what I'm saying? She taught me to be humble. She taught me not to brag. No matter how much you got, don't brag about it. You know, if you see somebody struggling and you can help them, help them. You know, my mother taught me those. She taught me a lot of valuable lessons. And since I've been in recovery, I've been able to benefit from them. But anyway, I was so fearful. I was laughing coming down here because me and the guy was coming down here. And this is one of the ways I can see how this program has helped me. When I first came home in 98 from that last bit I told y'all about, I hadn't been down Route 50 since childhood. Since I was, what is that, Sandy Point, Fort Smallwood, something that we used to go to back in the day. And we used to go down there when I was a little boy. And I forgot all about that because all my years was, you know, I just told you where I spent my years. Yeah. So when I came home in 98, me and my other sister was coming to like a church revival down this way. And I was driving. Forgot all about. So when we got to the Bay Bridge, I saw the bridge. I said, oh, my God. I pulled over. She said, what's wrong, bro? I said, I can't do it. I can't drive over there. You got to drive. When I saw that young man, I was like, oh, my God, what is that? And I couldn't understand why I was feeling like that. But I thought about it when I was little, and I first saw it when I was little, it scared me. And I hadn't seen it anymore. So when I seen it that day, all that fear came rushing back. So I by that time, I had been around y'all long enough to know it wasn't no use lying. I pulled over and say, sis, you got to drive. So she said, what's wrong? I said, I can't drive. I'm scared of that bridge. I might have to lay down in the back seat. So she got the wheel, right? She got the wheel and I didn't lay down in the back seat. I sat in the front seat. But my anxiety level was so high, I wanted to open the door and get out the car. And that would have been just as crazy because we're driving. So thank God that I had learned to start telling the truth in here because I told some people. I said, man, I don't know what this is. And I found out I had an anxiety disorder. So I started seeing a therapist. And on the way down here, I was telling my partner I was riding with. Well, he know about it. And we was going over. I was driving. This is about, 13 years later, right? I was driving. And he said, man, you came on over, huh? I said, yeah, I've been coming over, you know. Things get better, you know. faith through faith and the practice of these principles, you know, you get better. You know, I say, but trust me, I still got the anxieties. It's just that they're not as bad as they used to be, you know. But things don't go away. Our character defects and the things that I know the things I suffer from, they don't really go away. I just learned how to deal with them a little better and not let them knock me totally off my square anymore. So we made it over. And, you know, that's one of the most tangible ways I can show you that this program has worked for me is because, for one, I'm standing up here talking to y'all. And the fact that I rode over that bridge that day, and I've been doing it for some years now, you know. When I go fishing, not just coming down here, but when I go fishing and all that, you know. And sometimes it's real bad. Sometimes I don't feel nothing at all. But every time I make it, you know, I haven't had to pull. And it's always an alternative because you can pull over and get somebody else from down there to drive over for you, you know. But I haven't had the result of that yet. You know what I'm saying? So, we're close. Okay, so I'm sorry, y'all, but I don't want to go over, and you know, but that's one way, and a little bit more about. Can I read y'all something real quick? Y'all mind? Because this tells it better than I ever could talking it. And I wrote this like 14 years ago. It says, my identity in the neighborhood came from being my sister's brother. Like I said, people would say, that's Nita's little brother. At this time, I had a friend who was really goofy. He dressed funny and had an awkward demeanor. However, I felt equal and comfortable with him. He was shy and somewhat withdrawn like myself. Him and I would put together model cars, and his family would take me places with them. I also had another set of friends who liked to play rough games like football and wrestling. I felt intimidated around them. The feeling of having something to prove and not appearing afraid was constant in their presence. When I was about 10, my goofy friend and his family moved to the country. I only saw him once or twice afterwards. Gradually, I drifted more and more to my rowdy friends. This is the period when the uncomfortable feeling of being vulnerable and afraid when someone around appeared aggressive and courageous was first noticed. Because everyone else acted bold and aggressive, I thought I was a coward or something. I noticed that I was not as assertive as the other kids. Activities that might thrust me into the spotlight were shunned, especially if I didn't judge myself entirely capable of performing the activity satisfactorily. I longed for encouragement and reassurance. No wonder gaining the acceptance of the most unruly crowd was so vital. No doubt gaining their acceptance helped quiet the insecurities raging inside. Looking back, it's easy to see I lacked the confidence and sense of security essential to enjoying a fulfilling childhood. You know, and that's how I felt about myself, y'all. You know, that's the honest picture of me. My fears, my doubts, and kind of like how I ended up in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. Ended up an addict, a hopelessly addicted addict. Okay, I'm glad my time is closed up. But that kind of tells you why I ended up such a hopelessly addicted addict, because I had very little self, you know, what I would call self-esteem, self-assurance, self-confidence. I was totally inferior. I felt totally inferior, you know. And, man, since I've been with y'all, life has gotten so much better. You know, and I ain't talking about nothing I've acquired or none of that kind of stuff, even though the acquisitions have been great. What I've acquired most of all is faith. You know, faith in y'all, faith in a higher power, faith that ain't nothing in this existence really out of order, you know. How it is how it's supposed to be. You know, I want to close with this, you know. I used to always say the third step prayer, take my will in my life, guide me in my recovery, teach me how to live. You know, and that kind of like tells me where I'm at, you know, in this program. They say you can't say it enough, you know. And really, to me, this third step prayer is like saying, help me, I still need help. I still need y'all support. I still need guidance, and I need y'all acceptance. One of the most vital things I can do, or anybody else can do as in Narcotics Anonymous, is be kind, be encouraging, and be tolerant of people that need our tolerance, our help, and our concern. You know, the newcomer or even the old person. We all need each other's support. You know, so with that, I want to thank y'all for listening, for being tolerant of me, and I'll keep coming.